I call this meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect, it is 1:30 on Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. Present today are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Yunt, myself, Senator Merrick. Senator Dunbar is excused as he is on guard duty. This afternoon, we will hold first hearings on House Joint Resolution 5, Secure Rural Program, School Program, and that's by Representative Bynum. Welcome, Representative. And Senate Bill 129, Payment of Contracts, by Senator Kawasaki. So welcome, Senator Kawasaki, as well. First up, we will have HJR 5, Secure Rural Schools Program, by Representative Bynum. And Representative Bynum has given his apologies that he will be called out for House Finance, and so we understand that. But if you if you'd like to come forward, put yourself on the record, and you can begin your presentation, and then Mr. Shaw will continue on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for being here. Thank you very much, and committee, for the opportunity to be here and present HJR 5, Secure Rural Schools. This is a very important program for rural schools within the state of Alaska. I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to present this important resolution to the committee. As you'd mentioned, I will be having to depart. I have sent my House Finance Committee starting right now, and so I'm going to go run to that. But I wanted to turn it over, with your permission, to the capable hands of Mr. Shaw, and I'll let him put himself on the record. He's my district staffer to help present this, and he will be able to answer all of your questions, I'm certain.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative, for being here.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Shaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Trevor Shaw, District Chief, to Representative Jeremy Bynum, House District 1. With your permission, would we like to go ahead and roll right in?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Joint Resolution 5 urges the United States Congress and the President of the United States to reinstate the Secure Rural Schools and Communities Self-Determination Act of 2000 and to make the funding mechanism in the act permanent. SRS, which is Secure Rural Schools, was enacted by the U.S. Congress to provide financial assistance to rural communities and school districts impacted by the sharp reduction of revenue from timber sales on federal lands and in national forests. Historically, a portion of Forest Service funds generated through multi-use activities such as grazing, timber production, and special use permits were distributed to eligible counties to help maintain local roads and schools. However, with the significant decline of the timber industry in the 1990s, lawmakers sought to provide relief to local communities and economies through an alternative funding mechanism. In fiscal year 2023, forest counties across the United States received $252.6 million in payments under the SRS Act, including $12.6 million for communities here in the state of Alaska. These payments is broken down. You can see payments ranging from nearly $1.2 million to the Ketchikan Gateway Borough all the way down to the $22,000 that was received by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough in, for fiscal year 2023. And the bottom right, the column that says unorganized, those are municipalities that exist in the unorganized borough but receive receipts due to their location in the Chugach or the Tongass National Forest. And so those include municipalities that do not have borough-level incorporations such as Heidelberg, Klawock, Cake, Craig, Pelican, Huna, Gustavus, Cordova, and Valdez. And please, if you have questions at any time, please don't hesitate to ask.
Thank you.
What does SRS mean to communities in Alaska? In the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, Secure Rural Schools payments go to the local education fund, which is primarily funded through property taxes. The mill rate equivalent of the SRS payment is 14% would be a 14% equivalent of property taxes in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, or 10% of their total local contribution to schools. In the city and borough of Wrangell, SRS payments accounted for approximately 55% of their total local contribution to their school district. In the Petersburg Borough, SRS payments were equal to approximately 38% of their school funding contribution. In the city and borough of Yakutat, SRS payments were roughly equal to their total amount in local contribution to their school districts in FY23 and constituted nearly half of their overall municipal revenue. The SRS dollar impact per student, as we can see, three districts, Ketchikan, Juneau, and Sitka, their ADM versus the SRS payments per student are still are still, no doubt, a significant amount of revenue, but we can clearly see from Wrangell, Petersburg, and Yakutat that the loss of this funding disproportionately impacts smaller communities. And there are a number of communities where the SRS payments equal or exceed their total local contribution to schools, such as in places like Cake and Yakutat. And so what that would mean for, not only do they contribute nearly all of their local contribution to schools through SRS funding, but there's even SRS money left over for providing additional municipal services such as road maintenance. The issue is that the SRS Act funding was reauthorized in the Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act through September 30, 2023, IJA. The Secure Rural Schools Reauthorization Act of 2023 was introduced to extend SRS funding through 2026. And this bill ultimately passed the United States Senate by unanimous consent. However, it died without ever being heard by the House upon the adjournment of the 118th Congress. The last SRS payments, which we've been referencing under fiscal year 2023, were distributed to the states in respective states in April 2024. And without additional congressional action, there will be no further payments to communities under the SRS program. Thankfully, bipartisan reauthorization legislation was introduced back in February in both the House and the Senate, but at this point, neither of those bills have received a hearing. So that's why we introduce House Joint Resolution 5, urging the United States Congress and the President to reinstate this source of critical revenue for Alaska forest communities, to go one step further by creating a permanent funding mechanism according to the existing SRS formula, removing the uncertainty of the stopgap reauthorizations, of which there have been 8 over the past 25 years, would provide stability and predictability to these affected communities across the nation, especially the small rural communities that are disproportionately impacted by these lapses in funding. And one other thing I will note that I think is important is we received questions as this resolution was moving through the House regarding what it would look like if the timber industry happened to come back and timber receipts were being generated again. There's already a mechanism in the SRS Act to allow for county-level equivalents to instead receive timber receipts should the timber industry happen to begin again. And that is my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Shaw. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for your presentation. And I think this resolution is really, really great. That's why I'm a co-sponsor on it from the Senate side. And I'm just, really, really worried because we're asking Congress and the President to reinstate SRS, but with all the budget cuts that have been happening and continue to happen on a daily basis, what do we think? I mean, what do you think our chances are? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson, through the chair. That's a great question. I certainly don't want to venture a guess as to what Congress may or may not do. That's certainly why we believe it's important to act as a unified voice in the Alaska legislature to go ahead and make that statement. I've had some really good conversations with all the members of our congressional delegation about how important the reauthorization of secure rural schools is and what that truly means specifically for our smaller communities. Is a lot of these communities don't even remotely have the tax base necessary to make up the loss of revenue. So we're talking devastating cuts if this funding isn't reauthorized. And so hopefully we can continue to have those conversations and not just with our delegation, but hopefully be able to reach out to some other states that are impacted as well and see what we can do to make sure that Washington, D.C. really understands how much this program means. It might not seem like a lot of money, but the impacts are vast.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Anything further from the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Shaw, thank you for being here today. We will set House Joint Resolution 5 aside for now and bring it up at a future hearing.
Okay. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, thank you.
Brief at ease. call the committee back to order at 1:41 p.m. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 129, Payments of Contracts, by Senator Kawasaki. Senator, if you and your staff, Jenna Calhoun, would place yourselves on the record and introduce your bill. Thank you for being here.
Great. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, Scott Kawasaki, representing Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and Badger Road in the Senate.
For the record, Jenna Calhoun, staff to Senator Kawasaki.
And I will just read briefly some of the statement and then have Ms. Calhoun talk over the sectional, if it pleases the committee. Let's see. So whether an organization is structured as a profit or nonprofit organization, money is required to fulfill the goals of the company. So in order for these entities to run efficiently, they rely on good faith dealings with other vendors. And one of those key issues of good faith dealing is that they get paid in a timely manner. Currently, construction businesses enjoy legislation that prioritizes prompt payment for services from the state of Alaska to ensure that they're able to run effectively. That same consideration is not presently extended to groups like Alaska Native organizations or municipalities or nonprofits who face some of the similar operational challenges as for-profit businesses. Senate Bill 129 would rectify this disparity by legislating the need for prompt payment to these essential organizations. And I know many of you have been on private boards or public boards, nonprofit boards, and from time to time, they're waiting on payments. And sometimes these nonprofit organizations, I belong to one that requires Medicaid, for instance, we have to sometimes take a line of credit out. And that is an unfortunate problem that I think we're seeing more and more of. The state of Alaska is responsible for distributing funds such as Medicaid reimbursements to healthcare organizations, community assistance to municipalities, and grants for public service initiatives. Municipalities have reported that delays in receiving funding from the state have affected payroll, project funding, insurance renewals, and critical infrastructure investments. Alaska Native organizations have reported the same issues, but feel they're more keenly due to the vulnerable populations they serve and who rely on this consistent, high-quality care and support, especially when it comes to their health care. The state's inability to pay these entities in a timely manner is not only harmful to them, but also increases the long-term costs due to interest, lost investment returns, and administrative inefficiencies. So this prompt payment parity is just a bill that brings back some fair contracting and the principle of fair contracting back to the dealings that we as a state have with some of these nonprofit organizations. And I know there's a couple other folks who are here in invited testimony who would like to speak to it, so I will just end it there and then leave my staff member to read the sectional.
Fantastic. Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. I will note for the committee that Tom Mayer, the Chief Procurement Officer with the Department of Administration, is online should you have questions. Ms. Calhoun, please proceed with the sectional.
Thank you, Chair. Section 1 amends AS 36.30 by adding a new section requiring a state agency to promptly pay a contractor for satisfactory service. Criteria are established for acceptable delays in payment and the protocol related to alerting a contractor for the reason for this delay. This section provides several timelines for the accruement of interest on late payments. A late payment will begin to accrue interest on the 31st calendar day after invoice, and a reasonably delayed payment will begin to accrue interest on the 21st calendar day after resolution on the contract has been found. Section 2 amends AS 36.30, Article 4, by adding a new section to include the prompt payment of grants and reimbursements for nonprofit organizations, municipalities, and Alaska Native organizations. Timelines delineating the accruement of interest on late payments for state funds and federal pass-through funds are established, as are acceptable delays in payment and the protocol for notifying noticing as such. An agency has 21 calendar days from invoice to pay without interest penalty if using federal pass-through funds, and 30 calendar days from invoice to pay without interest penalty for all other payments. This section also defines the terms used throughout the bill. Section 3 amends AS 37.05.319 by adding a new subsection D, which requires the state agency to pay at least 20% of the grant amount within 10 days. This section also delineates how the rest of the grant must be paid to a named recipient either in monthly installments equal to the recipient's monthly expenditures or a lump sum determined by the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Section 4 provides an immediate effective date for this measure.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? I have a question for Tom Mayer, the Chief Procurement Officer with the Department of Administration. This is Senator Merrick. Are these payments not being made promptly because of staffing issues in the department, or what's causing the delay?
Senator Merrick, through the chair. My office, the Office of Procurement and Property Administration for Property Management, we do not actually make payments. We establish contracts for multiple agencies to use. Listening to the testimony when it was in the House, it appears to mostly be grant funding that is not being processed and moved out to the communities or into the grantees. So I can't really say if there's a staffing problem with that. We have reached out to agencies for fiscal notes for everybody, if that helps.
Great. Thank you very much. Senator Kawasaki, do you have any comments on that? What might be causing these delays?
I mean, we've heard sort of anecdotal evidence, and of course we hear reports every day about the number of vacancies in each department and agency. And of course we've all sat on a budget subcommittee, so we've heard about these 20% to 30% vacancy rates at very basic levels. And these are the people who write the check that says we need to pay this person, or they're the ones that communicate back and forth. So I think, you know, over the last 10 years, we've had a real problem making sure that we've got enough employees to do the work of government. And, you know, there's a lot of paperwork in sort of this bureaucracy in this government. And it's there, and it's, it is something that we need to do. When it comes to prompt payment, though, there are businesses, there's individuals, there's companies that always rely on having that sort of face-to-face with a person who's actually staff, and with vacancy rates as high as they are in just about every agency. I think that's part of it, part of the problem.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. I suppose my concern is that passing this legislation won't actually let that department do their jobs more quickly, you know, if it is a staffing issue. So we'll try to get some more information on that. Anything further from the committee before invited testimony? Okay, super. First, we have Carol Treem with the Alaska Municipal League. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Merrick. My name is Carol Treem, and I am the Intergovernmental Affairs Manager for the Alaska Municipal League. Thank you for giving us the opportunity today to talk about SB 129. Every single one of our 165 members receives payments from the state in one way or another, and every single one provides essential services that cannot stop or be turned off. For the smallest communities in the state especially, receiving delayed payments is not just an administrative inconvenience, it creates real hardship. For many small cities, community assistance is the most important state program that remits payments from the state to local governments. Community assistance is the state's way to fulfill its promise of revenue sharing, and it is one of the main sources of revenue in smaller communities, particularly those without large tax bases or gaming revenue. Municipal resources are typically stretched thin or even depleted by the end of the fiscal year, making it very important that these local governments receive payments from the state on time. Without timely payments, cities face cash flow issues, problems making payroll, and delays can cause extra costs in contracts and purchases. For example, the city of Tuxuk Bay, delayed community assistance payments there resulted in higher insurance costs when interest penalties were added after missed payment deadlines. And I just also want to mention community assistance, is not the only program through which the state gives money to local governments. And here's a short, non-exhaustive list of others just to give a sense of the scope of what we're talking about. So we have PCE program. 94 communities received community assistance payments in the last fiscal year. 212 active legislative grants, so grants that you make in the legislature typically through the capital budget and grants to named recipients. The Community Development Block Grant, shared state taxes, including fishery, business, and landing taxes, and school bond debt reimbursement. Additionally, federal money is passed through the state in different programs, including PILT, the National Forest Receipts and Secure Rural Schools Program that you just heard about, and NPRA impact mitigation grants. Thank you for allowing us this time today, and we appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Dream. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, we appreciate you being here today. Next is Lori Wolf of the 4-Acre Group. Ms. Wolf, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Committee Chair Merrick and committee members. For the record, my name is Lori Wolf. I'm the president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group. Thank you for inviting me to testify in support of Senate Bill 129, which establishes prompt payment parity for Alaska nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations for grants, contracts, and reimbursements from the state of Alaska, including federal pass-through funding. We appreciate the attention from Representative Hemshoot and Senator Kawasaki and other co-sponsors to one of the most important pieces of legislation supporting Alaska nonprofits since the passage of PICLA's GIVE program 16 years ago. Here's what Alaska organizations are facing right now and why legislation is critical. 3, 6, 9 months, some more than a year in delayed payments. A couple of $100,000 to more than $1 million in delayed payments. Delayed payment comes from almost every department in the state and impacts all types of services, from seniors to childcare to domestic violence to housing, food security, transportation, public safety, and more. The state relies on us to deliver services as its partner through grants, contracts, and reimbursements. Yet this partnership, when it comes to the money, is broken. Because of the current process, we are asked to report on money that we have not received in order to stand in line to the next payment, which could also be delayed. This should sound odd and unbelievable, and yet it's real for hundreds of Alaska organizations far too often. Some of our executives don't even know a reality that could look different because this has been the reality for so long. Sadly, delayed payments have become a normal and even acceptable practice for nonprofits that are providing essential services around the state. Importantly, this money that has been approved by the legislature, one would simply assume that if the money is budgeted, approved, and allocated, then spending could occur. That seems efficient. That seems like good government. In fact, prompt payment is exactly the rule the state must follow when conducting transactions with for-profit businesses as directed by statute AS 36.90.200. Unfortunately, these rules do not apply to nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations, and they should. Over many years and multiple administrations, we have tried to solve this problem, hoping honestly that we wouldn't get to this stage. One former commissioner told us that nonprofits should just take out a line of credit to manage delayed payments, as though it were the job of nonprofits to subsidize the state. Not only do lines of credit require collateral, which many nonprofits will never have, it is not the job of nonprofits to subsidize the state, and that is exactly what many of them are doing every day. What other choice do they have? Our goal is to ensure the state is efficient and that the work organizations provide for Alaskans is predictable, stable, and available. To demonstrate the severity of this issue, we surveyed Alaska organizations to learn more about their experiences. Here's what they told us about their reality. The survey data you have and that we'll send you in a packet of information from us is simply a point-in-time survey to give a snapshot of the pervasive nature of this issue. The top-line impact of delayed payments includes cash flow issues. Many respondents re-emphasized the severe strain on cash flow, with organizations needing to use reserves, lines of credit, or borrow funds to cover operational costs such as payroll, purchasing, and bills. This was particularly difficult for organizations that rely on grant funding or reimbursable services. Operational delays disrupted services, project timelines, and the ability to make necessary purchases. Some organizations even had to pause operations or reduce staff until payments were received. Increased administrative burden. Organizations reported spending significant time and resources dealing with delayed payments, including advocating for overdue funds, rebilling, and communicating with funding agencies. This diversion of resources led to additional stress on staff and operational inefficiencies. Uncertainty and financial planning challenges. The lack of predictability of payment schedules created uncertainty in budgeting and financial planning. Several organizations had to make difficult decisions about whether to proceed with projects or delay them based on the expectation of when funds might eventually arrive. Negative impact on staff and services. Some respondents noted that delayed payments led to late payroll, staff dissatisfaction, and the possibility of layoffs. In certain cases, it was reported that delays could jeopardize continued vital services for vulnerable populations. Strained relationships. Delays also strained relationships with contractors, vendors, and other third parties, with some organizations reporting difficulty in meeting obligations or renegotiating payment terms. And finally, impact on program continuity. For some organizations, delayed payments threatened the continuity of programs and services, especially in critical areas such as healthcare and education, where funding delays can have immediate consequences. Our reality is that nonprofits do not have the financial reserves to float a major state grant or contract to support a program or project with their own funds while waiting for the allocated state dollars to come through. And even if they do, as I've already pointed out, it is not the responsibility of nonprofits to subsidize the state's delayed payments. These impacts should be enough to compel us all to change how this process operates. But consider, too, it's not just our entities and Alaskans who are hurt. The economies around the state are also harmed. Specifically, we know that delayed payments has a direct impact on the ability of Alaskans to access essential services. It has a direct impact on nonprofit staff recruitment and retention across Alaska. And it hurts the whole economy because nonprofits cannot pay their bills to other not-for-profits and nonprofit vendors. We need this legislation because, unlike a business or contractor working on a public project, when current Alaska statute says they will be paid on time or receive penalties and interest, the rules also say the contractor can stop work until payment is received. Our reality is that we cannot just stop doing what we're doing to get the state's attention. The consequences are too high for Alaskans who depend on us. I anticipate that one of your questions is, how much money are we talking about? Unfortunately, we've been trying to calculate this number for years. We have solid data from surveys and personal counts, but there is no single system for tracking delayed payments that we know about. Each state department has its own system and processing for tracking. I anticipate that you will also ask how we think this problem should be fixed. To be sure, we know the state faces workforce shortages and technology issues, but we can't tell you how to fix those. Still, we will say that we are no longer willing to remain silent while a broken system asks nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations to carry the burden of both delivering services and covering the costs while we wait. We want parity with for-profit businesses to be treated as partners in the work of serving Alaskans. After all, that is how Alaska's economy works best, when we as organizations come together with local, state, and federal governments to serve Alaskans. To be clear, we're not asking the state to go back and address their past delays with penalties and interest. We simply want to establish a foundation for moving forward based on prompt payment parity, along with powerful incentives for the state to pay on time, just like in the private sector. That is the purpose of Senate Bill 129. I'll end with this reminder. The health and well-being of Alaskans and Alaska economy depend on strong working relationships among nonprofits, tribal organizations, municipalities, and the state. Payment for services is an expected part of this relationship, and I strongly urge you to consider this bill favorably. Many thanks. We'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. We appreciate your testimony. I know you've been working on this issue for quite some time. What kind of reasons are you have you been given that the payments are so delayed?
We have not been, well, over the years, and I do want to be clear, this has been going on for a very long time, and thank you for recognizing that we've been talking about this for a long time. You know, we've been given a whole host of reasons why, and I think that in the moment, that's fine, but it doesn't, those reasons never address the systemic issues that are creating delayed payments in every department. So I don't know, you know, To a person, to a conversation, we might get an answer, but I don't think anyone has a systemic answer.
Great. Thank you. Senator Yunt.
Yeah. Through the chair, a couple of quick questions. Do we know what percentage of payments are made late? And then building on that question, of the payments that are made late, what the average length of the late payments would be?
Ms. Wolf.
Oh, thank you, through the chair. So we do have a point-in-time survey data that we can provide for you. I think the answer is that it is in all the departments of government, and that there is no, as I mentioned in my testimony, there is no one system to track all the late payments and all the total amount of money. We have been asking for that for years, and we have never received an answer.
Senator,
so I can't answer your question because that is one of our questions. I do have data for you about that goes 3, 6, 9. We have over a year's worth of delayed payments we have record of. And again, those are our point-in-time survey, and I will provide that for you with my written testimony.
Thank you. Senator Yunt.
Thank you. Just whatever you can give us to look at. I'm sorry that you can't get those answers. I wish we all knew exactly what those numbers were, but anything that you have that we could review in the next committee hearing would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wolf, for joining us today. We appreciate your testimony. And our final invited testifier is Stephanie Berglund from Thread. Ms. Berglund, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Hello, and good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Merrick and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify. I'm Stephanie Berglund, the CEO of Thread, Alaska's statewide child care research and referral organization. Thread is a 39-year-old nonprofit, primarily a direct service organization, and our largest sources of funding come from partnership with the State Department of Health and the Department of Education and Early Development. While we work very closely with the state and are thankful for their partnership to empower families in finding childcare and ensuring early educators are trained and supported to deliver high-quality early care and learning services, the grant process, namely timely payments, has been a long-standing problem impacting consistent and reliable early care and education support services. That's why I'm here today endorsing Senate Bill 129. While some of our Department of Health grants have most recently seen improvements to the payment process, grants and contracts through both the Department of Health and the Department of Education and Early Development are overall inconsistent and do not follow the agreements as outlined. Thread encounters significant delays and uncertainties surrounding payments and reimbursements from the state of Alaska. Over the last 5 years alone, it's been the exception, not the norm, that Thread's state grants and contracts are processed and paid on time following the outlined agreements. While Thread can usually support the cash flow of the irregular or unpredictable payment schedules, we have been put in tight financial and programming situations. This includes a few years back when two of our grants were paid for the advance payment, agreed on and expected in early July, in January of that fiscal year. And an example of what Lori shared, we've also been in a situation to provide first quarter fiscal reports in order to receive the subsequent quarter payment without ever receiving the first payment. And that triggered needing to get direction on how to report spending that did not use state money for the actual expenses. The grant payment process is further compounded when there are amendments needed, which are also repeatedly not timely or responsive to the scope of work in service delivery needs. These issues disrupt and delay services and ultimately create a bottleneck of service delivery needing to be completed in a shortened period of time as grants need to be fully spent by June 30th. Overall, there's inconsistency in how departments issue, approve, disperse, and pay for granted and contracted services. This includes irregularity in following agreement timelines. The lack of payment parity has been a growing issue and has persisted across multiple administrations, affecting organizations statewide, including Thread clients. Thread supports the nearly 400 child care small businesses across the state. Most are enrolled in the Child Care Assistance Program, relying on state assistance payments to support their operations and regular business expenses. Unlike private pay family tuition paid at the start of a child care service, the state child care assistance is paid as a reimbursement and is today and has been paid inconsistently to child care business owners. One childcare business in Soldotna shared that she at times has to negotiate paying her utilities late due to late child care assistance reimbursement payments. Child care programs work on a very tight budget and margin and need reliable reimbursement payments. Payment delays put the sustainability of these child care programs further at risk than they already are, compromising the high quality services they provide to families every day. I strongly urge you to prioritize the passage of Senate Bill 129 to allow nonprofits like THRED to continue our vital work without the financial and service delivery instability caused by delayed payments. Resolving this issue is essential to the nonprofit sector and ensures we can continue to effectively serve our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berglund. Questions from the committee? I see none. I will invite Senator Kawasaki back to the table. Senator, how do you envision this being enforced? Yeah, I realize that there is a interest and penalty portion, but how do you see it being enforced?
Sure. Thank you. For the record, Senator Scott Kawasaki. And Madam Chair, you know, really what it boils down to is I think that agencies want to do the best they can. And I wanted to just point out that there's a fiscal note from Department of Labor and Workforce Development. It's fiscal note number, doesn't have a number on it, but it's one of the fiscal notes from Department of Labor, and it very clearly talks about the potential while they can figure out, while internally there's no cost and it's a zero fiscal note, that, you know, if they were to be assessed obligations and they looked at a couple late payments at a particular point in time, they estimated what that interest and what the liability would be. But then the very last sentence talks about, from a programmatic standpoint, what they would do is that the department would make the best effort to change program processes to avoid any interest. And I think really that's what we want agencies to do, is we don't want to have a municipality or a nonprofit or a childcare development center not get paid on time. We absolutely want that. I know the departments want that. But if we were to pass a bill like this with a zero fiscal note, I think in the end what will happen is that agencies will respond by creating a better program process, which is what is in this fiscal note. So, you know, in the end, I think we're going to have a better process. I think that this will help spur that decision to make it better. And also, I think that for folks who do business with the state, folks can be sure that the state will pay. And that's an assurance that I think we owe it to all of these nonprofits and all these pass-throughs, that we get them the payment on time.
Thank you, Senator. And I will note for the record that that fiscal note is from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, OMB component number 340. Thanks. Anything further from the committee? Seeing none, any closing comments?
No, I just wanted to thank this committee again for bringing this up so quickly, so promptly, and wanted to just say that would love to see this kind of legislation pass, and I appreciate the others who've co-sponsored this bill as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. We appreciate you bringing this forward. We will set Senate Bill 129 aside for further consideration. And that concludes our agenda for this afternoon. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, April 8th at 1:30 p.m. So at 2:10 p.m., we are adjourned. Thank you.